From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's Asan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
Wake up! It's Wake Up War Champ presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Coming up on today's show, we get right to it. Spring practice started yesterday. Full observations. Offense, a little bit of the defense, as well as Clemson joining the fight against the ACC. Wake Up War Champ presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida. CPTallyBar.com, the website. QR code takes you right there. Your vehicle should take you to 2475 Appalachian Parkway. That's where it is located. Daily lunch specials, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., but on Tuesdays, it's all day. Those tacos from yesterday. Hope you enjoyed it, everybody. Today, get you five-piece chicken wings and french fries. Boom, only $8.99. Don't even have to think. Chicken wings and french fries. Corner Pocket does them right all the time. Check it out. And don't forget, tomorrow, bingo night, 7 o'clock. Test your bingo skills, win drinks and prizes. Good times always at the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Again, cptallybar.com, 2475 Appalachian Parkway. Warchant.com, your ultimate Seminole sports source. Thumbs up, five-star rating and review, please. Subscribe as well. Tis the season. Spring. Man, lots happened yesterday. Lots going to happen today, too, apparently. We're going to interview a bunch of guys before Pro Day. We're going to talk to Link. The Noles still undefeated. Let's go.
Barely, by the skin of their teeth, but they did it.
Hey, man, it shows character, right? Like, they can win it all sorts of different ways.
Two straight one-run wins, and they don't win a lot of 1-0 games in these parts here lately, so that was it's impressive pitching and defense, man.
Yeah. What was impressive from the Florida State football team? Let's start with the offense, Corey. Practice spring ball started yesterday. We'll be back out there on Thursday and Saturday. They'll scrimmage next Thursday, so it's coming fast and furious. I think all eyes on the quarterback position, fair enough to say. I know there's a lot to talk about on the offense, but I guess we should probably start at quarterback. Thoughts on Brock Glenn, DJ Uiagalelei, and Luke Cromenhawk, Mr. Five-Star.
Yeah. And the Trevor Jackson kid.
Yeah.
It was, as I wrote on the website that you can read, I'm not going to give it all away, but as I wrote, he didn't look like a walk-on. There's a reason he was at the Elite 11. Like, he could have gone and played college football somewhere. He came to Florida State as a walk-on, and he throws a nice ball, man. He spins it pretty well. But anyway, DJ looked kind of exactly how I thought he would. Solid. Missed a couple of throws that you're like, yeah, come on, make that, man. That's there. But then also had a couple of really nice throws, including like a 90-yarder. It's one-on-ones, and it was against a walk-on. But a 90-yarder to Destin Hill that was just a thing of beauty down the middle of the field. And it's so easy, Aslan, the way he throws it. It's just so easy. It kind of reminds me, because we just touched on baseball, when Cam Smith just gobbles up a ball at third, it just kind of – it looks like he's, like, barely exerting any energy at all. It's like 60%, let me just toss it over there lightly to first. But he's got such a good arm that it still gets there in a hurry. Like, most people having to throw as hard as they can. That's DJ just kind of looking to me like he's just kind of, not even really girding up and throwing it. I thought he moved well. Not that they're doing a lot of QB sneaks, but I thought he moved well in the pocket. He just moved well overall. What I thought was obvious and very easy to see for anybody that was watching practice, and people at the baseball game on Tuesday got to some of it, was that it was a bunch of quarterbacks throwing to a bunch of receivers they've never thrown to before. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's a good part of the explanation, I'm sure. Yes, well said.
Yeah, it just did. Like, there were guys, as Ira and I talked about on the wrap, guys that it was supposed to be back shoulder throws and they weren't ready for them, or they've never done them before, certainly in an official practice. We know the QBs and receivers throw to each other, but it's different when it's an official practice and you're trying to climb or stay up upon a depth chart. So it just looked to me like there were a step off here and there. And this was just even in, I would say, even when they were on air, when it was the receivers just running routes without any DBs at the beginning of practice, there were some throws. They made most of them, but there were some throws or some routes that were just a little off because you know, one guy might run a seven-step route differently than the other guy. And you got to get used to how they come out of a break, how quickly they come out of a break, or how slow in some cases, or how fast they are. And you got to adjust. And it's just stuff that takes time. And you don't have Jordan Travis throwing to Johnny Wilson or Kentron Portier. You have DJ throwing to Malik Benson. They've never been on a practice field together before. So you saw a little bit of that. But overall, as much as I thought the offense struggled or the defense played well, however you want to do it when it comes to the secondary versus the receivers matchup, you see some stuff in there, man. Jaylen Brown is slight. He is not a big man. I think he's listed at like 6'1", 170. But, man, he just moves in a way with easy speed. It reminds me of Rashad Greene. You know how Rashad Greene always – he never looked like he was running hard?
Right.
And yet he kept running away from people, even really good defenses. That's what Jaylen Brown reminds me of, just his body type and the way he moves, the fluidity and the speed. It really translates. And then Malik Benson looked pretty darn good too. Malik Benson looked better than anybody in the receiving corps, quite honestly. Destin Hill, I thought, were the two bright spots out of the receiving corps on day one. I'm going to keep reminding everyone and myself, it's day one. But I really liked Landon Thomas too, man. He doesn't move like a typical tight end. You can see why at one point he was ranked wherever he was ranked, because he moves with a fluidity and an urgency that isn't typical of a tight end in college football. So that is exciting too. But we'll see, man. We're in the middle of March. We'll see what they end up being by April 20th. And obviously what matters most is what they are August 24th.
Yeah, Landon Thomas is one of the guys that made it into the phone in terms of nice plays. There was a ball in 7-on-7 that came from Brock Glenn. I thought Camden Fryer had a pretty nice day. I kind of believe. Maybe he could be that sort of what Ja'Kai was in 2022, you know. When he was healthy, at least. Maybe 21. Maybe 21 is more accurate because, you know, Ja'Kai had still been, you know, that's like his third year in the program. I don't want to put that much expectation.
I also think he's different. I think he's different than Ja'Kai, that I think he might be an out wide guy, but he's certainly more of just a prototypical receiver. He's bigger than Ja'Kai. I think he's faster than Ja'Kai. Probably doesn't have that, you know, burst of quickness, because who does? Ja'Kai is crazy. Well, besides Ja'Kai's brother. Holy cow. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But yeah, man, Cam Fryer is it's interesting. You know, his dad was such a hard worker, and his dad was a good athlete too. You don't get to Florida State just because you're gritty. Not in the early 90s. You crazy? He could move. He was a good athlete. Cam Fryer, athletically, and you guys all know why I'm saying this, but it has been a long, long time since Florida State had a white receiver. I don't see color, folks. Telling you how it
Somebody
is.
Somebody told Corey that. Corey's like, what do you mean he's a white receiver? And the guy was
exactly right. I don't see color. I just see the number, 88. Yeah. I didn't remember it. I thought his dad – I didn't know his dad was white. You see these kind of receivers, and what's always funny is when he bursts onto the scene, and he will at some point, whether it's this year or next year, he is going to be compared to Julian Edelman or – who was the other guy for the Patriots?
Wes Welker.
They catch it. He isn't one of those guys. I mean, I just think he's more of an outside threat, maybe, because he can move. But yeah, what Norvell has said certainly seemed to translate. Like, ask Charles Lester, man. That was not close when they went one on ones. Fryer got off the line quick and then separated on an inside route from Charles Lester, who's a very good athlete. So the point being, his athleticism translates. He's not one of these cliche, just a coach on the field, hard worker. I mean, he's all that too. He's a hard worker. I'm not saying he isn't. Catches everything. He's also an exceptional athlete. So that's exciting. So is McCoy. Isn't that his name, 15?
LaWayne McCoy, yeah, man.
Man, he moves in a – like, again, I'm talking as if the offense dominated, and they didn't. I'm judging McCoy almost solely on how he looked at going against air. But he moves really – oh, he did shake somebody in 7-on-7s. I can't remember who, but he shook the dickens out of someone. They didn't throw him the ball. They threw it to the other side of the field. But, again, you're talking about, I think, a step up in athleticism at that position than they've had in a good long while.
Thought Vandravius had a pretty decent day as well. Deuce Spann had a nice corner route he ran in sevens that came off the arm of Brock Glenn. And then there was a really good screen pass. One of the few highlights, I thought, for Croman Hawk on Tuesday. It was a really good screen pass. I think it was 11-on-11 to Jalen Lucas. And,
yeah,
man, he's,
yikes. He's fast,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I wrote that. They really only had two good plays passing-wise in all of 11-on-11. And I thought they were both screen passes. I thought that one and then one to Keziah Holmes that might have been a touchdown too. It's hard to know, folks, because they blow the whistle. Once somebody gets outside and the play is deemed a success, Norvell starts blowing the whistle and the defense stops. Now, the kid with the ball still has to run all the way to the end zone, but the defense stops. But it certainly looked like, especially in the Jalen Lucas play, yeah, that was probably a 70-yard touchdown because nobody's catching him. He is out of a cannon. He's a guy, you talk about under the radar, he's a guy we never talk about, ever. And then that one play was like, oh, they got to get him the ball somehow. Like, that was almost jaw-dropping how fast he was. And that, because it kind of came out of nowhere. Screen pass, you know, it's the end of practice, kind of just kind of not going through the motions, but it's just been a long day watching a lot of football and not a lot of completions. And then out of nowhere, a screen pass to this kid, and he is just off like lightning. So that was cool to see. That was, again, they have aggressively recruited and brought in speed. And they have a lot of it.
I thought Kentron, like, he looked the best to me of the receivers in some of the moments in one-on-ones.
I think that's just because of the jersey he's wearing.
It might be because, like, when he caught it, I was like, dang, I'm like, this Malik Benson guy.
Right.
I'm like, what is going on in Alabama that, like, he was behind, you know, the Bond kid and Jermaine Burton, you know, what's going on there? Then I'm like, oh, wait. I'm like, he's 10, Malik Benson. I'm like, one's Kentron.
Yeah, Kentron used to be 88. Now he's one. I'm telling you, guys, if we have any high school athletes listening to us that are football players, do whatever you can to wear the number one. It is incredible how much – he just looks like svelter and faster and more – he's obviously an athletic kid. He's a wide receiver at Florida State. He's a good player. But, man, he looks even – just that one is just sharp. That's the number you need to wear if you're a football player. Holy cow.
All right, so all that said, to then say before we get to the defense, Corey, I think Ira did a really good sort of job of having the more nuanced approach of looking at it when you guys did the wrap about pointing out that there was so much teaching going on, like just an excessive amount of teaching.
Did
we
you
had
notice
seen.
How low the music was?
I don't know.
The IPF?
I did. I don't know if that was because they were experimenting with the headset inside the helmets or.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
That was because I saw Norvell and Fuller were on walkie talkies, not headsets like usual. Like they were on walkie talkies. So I'm like, maybe they're doing the in helmet communication. And he got asked about that after practice. Couldn't make out what he said because it was tough to hear with Florida State playing a baseball game behind him. But I think he said they're experimenting and he didn't really give us many details on it. But, you know, all that to say. And as Ira pointed out, there was so much like teaching going on because, you know, last year, Jordan knew everything inside and out. And Jai knew it to a large degree. And Trey knew it to a large degree. And the offensive line knew it to a large degree. All this said, man, like, it just wasn't nearly as crisp. And not that I expected it to, but it was just part of me reflected for brief moments on Tuesday, like, yeah, man. Last year's team was really good. That it was boring almost watching them at times because they were so clinical and so efficient. And like I really think the ball hit the ground more in one spring practice almost than I saw all fall camp last year with that team. But anyway, they were 13-0, that quarterback, and fall camp is still, you know, whatever, 5 months away from now. So I'm not in no shape or form panicking everybody or telling you not to come to Ireland and party with us to beat Georgia Tech, but just, you know, there's probably going to be some growing pains, I would think. Hopefully not during the season, but I think we'll maybe see some up and down moments throughout spring that'll keep us maybe a little bit more even keeled.
If you think about it, though, and I wrote this too in the thing that's on War Chant, is how – what would you think if they had looked really sharp?
I would have been like, man, they've got this thing figured out. Like this guy just –
Right, but then there's another side of the ball – that you would be like, oh, that's not a great sign. These guys that have never played together are torching your experienced secondary? That's not good. Like, not only did they not look sharp just, you know, executing what they should be doing as an offense, they're also, in my opinion, going up against a darn good secondary.
Yes.
Especially if Quindarius Jones looks like he did on Tuesday. He was very good. He had a really impressive interception on a throw from in one-on-ones.
Yep.
In fact, they had three straight interceptions on three straight throws. Now, one of them, I'm almost positive Greedy Vance would have been flagged by every official on the field for holding. And Mike Norvell let that be known, like, get your hands off him. Yelled that to him as he's running back with the interception. And then another one, Darian Williamson on a deep throw kind of batted it up in the air when he really almost caught it and should have caught it. And Fentrell picked that off. And then on the very next play, Quindarius Jones made a nice, really nice play. But
Hakeem, by the way, it was DJ thrown to Hakeem. And
Quindarius just broke on it and made a – that's really good coverage. But, you know, and then, they have – Azaria Thomas was the best player on the field, in my opinion. I didn't watch any of the linemen, but from what I focused on with quarterbacks, receivers, and DBs, Azaria Thomas was a step above everybody. He was sensational on Tuesday. So, but the point being, Shaheem Brown, they have guys that can really play. So it's to be expected. When one side has to, it uses a lot of execution, timing, rhythm, and the other one is more experienced and has really good players, in my opinion, it would have been a bad sign if they got dusted and torched. So it's kind of, you know, again, it wasn't great. I'm not arguing that, hey, don't be concerned or think that it's not going to – don't underestimate how good this offense is going to be. It's going to be worlds better than the one from last year. But it is – it's the middle of March, and it was the first day of spring practice. Yeah. So there's a lot of there is a lot of room to grow, but they have room to grow, as in five and a half months to get ready for that game. So or whatever it is, 40 practices. So they have to use that room, but they should grow, because I do think the overall point with the offense, I thought, was that you saw enough potential in these body types, in the way they move, and the way DJ can spin it and throw it, that you like your chances that if they're clicking, they can be pretty darn good.
What's pretty darn good is Vitamin Energy, y'all. Energy with benefits. Vitamins and nutrients in addition to 260 milligrams of all-natural caffeine. You can find Vitamin Energy at retailers like Pilot, Flying J, Circle K, Casey's, TA, Sunoco, Town Pump, MAPCO, United Pacific, and more. You can even find it online at places like Amazon Prime, Walmart, GNC. You can go to their website, and they got a promo code, MADMARCH, Corey, and you get 24% off. That's for the general public. It's pretty cool. But you are a Florida State fan. Vitamin Energy, led by Florida State alum. So they've got the promo code WARCHAMPBOGO, WARCHAMP B-O-G-O. Buy one, get one free. Not great at math, Corey, but I think that's better than the 24% off promo, yes?
Yeah, I think it's, wouldn't that be 50% off? If I'm doing the math correctly.
Sounds just about right. We took the Mood Plus over here at the Midtown offices so that we could stay above the fray with all the hecticness going on Tuesday. Crushed it, per usual. And my workout was darn good, too. A little bit earlier in the day since I had to be out of practice. So everything was lining up. Right amount of energy, right amount of nutrients. I think it was the valerian root. It's always the valerian root that gets me going. Just right. VitaminEnergy.com, led by Knowles. Promo code hooking you up again. WARCHAMP BOGO. WARCHAMP B-O-G-O. Shake it and take it. VitaminEnergy.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Corey, much like you, I too was watching the offense largely. Shout out to our guy Ben Spicer. Later today, on our YouTube page, he'll upload the footage that he shot, which is mainly defenders, so get your hands on that. And then on Thursday, I'll film defense, he'll film offense. We're covering this thing, and it's incredible. We're covering it like, I don't know, the Washington Post would cover a presidential campaign. Like we're covering from all angles, everybody. We got you covered. So I only saw limited reps in pass rush when it came to defenders, but I know that KJ Sampson, as well as Tomiwa Durojaye, smoked the guys they went up against. Not going to say who they went up against. Just don't like doing that. But in pass rush, those guys look very impressive. Flash, I think when Sampson won his rep, since they practice later on in the day during spring, as we've mentioned a few times, because Norvell likes to do that to allow high school coaches and high school players to come attend and watch how they practice. These two high school players reacted and like ran over and shook their coach on the shoulder and were like praising and talking about just how good KJ Sampson looked in that rep. But otherwise, I thought, you know, the defensive backs, since we were focusing mainly on the offense and seeing the receivers going up against them, they're the ones that we probably have the biggest takeaways from. You've been on Azarie since day one, man. It sounds like you saw some growth from him on day one, Corey.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously we saw a lot of growth in him last year. He was very good for most of that season. But even it felt like it was even another step, and it's one practice in March, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. But he was, I thought, for one practice anyway, the best player on the field. They tried him multiple times with multiple receivers, never gave up. I don't think he gave up a completion. The only completion he gave up was it was a play where DJ in 7-on-7, Azarie was covering Ja'Kai Douglas. And it was one of those plays where nothing's open, nothing's open, nothing's open, and DJ starts running towards the line of scrimmage. So then Norvell blows the whistle, and then DJ throws a back shoulder throw to Ja'Kai against Azarie, and Ja'Kai makes a really nice catch, actually. Azarie is not even looking, makes a nice catch and kind of spins away and starts running. And Azarie very quickly let it be known to anyone within earshot that the whistle had blown and it didn't count because he wasn't playing anymore.
Was he over the – I thought he was over the line of scrimmage, too, when he threw the ball.
Oh, maybe. I don't know if it maybe. I didn't think that. It was close. It was a nice throw. It was a really nice play, actually, all around. But – the best defender wasn't – he really did. It wasn't just an excuse. Like, there were multiple whistles, and then DJ threw it anyway, and Ja'Kai made the catch. That was it, and that one didn't even count. He was lockstep with everybody he covered in one-on-one, 7-on-7s, and 11-on-11s. And he told him about it. All the DBs told him about it. And as Ira brought up, I noticed it too, but in 7-on-7, what was really cool, and when we talk about this program – Jarian Jones and Akeem Dent were both there. They're all in town because Jared Verse was there on Tuesday. Johnny Wilson, Jordan Travis, Trey Benson.
Trey Benson threw the first pitch at the
game. I hope he did better than Jared Verse did. I didn't see footage of his. But
skipped it in. Probably fell about 3 feet short of home plate. Yeah.
But Jarian and Akeem were on the sidelines watching 7-on-7. And they were yelling at the guys after they gave up a completion to communicate. Like, they were trying to coach them up. Like, communicate. Y'all got to communicate. And that's just cool to see that these guys are still invested in this program. And, yeah, they're going to go start their professional careers and maybe both get drafted. Jarian certainly seems to be going to get drafted. But they're here. Jermaine Johnson was there. They're just here, and they care. And they are still trying to coach up a team that they're not even a part of anymore. I don't know. I think that's the stuff that happens at Georgia. I think Kirby welcomes those guys back with open arms, and they coach their, you know, they'll give hints and coach their former teammates or younger guys. Yeah, I just think that's cool.
That's 2 days in a row that you've pointed that out, Corey. It's really seemed to kind of leave an impression with you.
It does, because it's not – these aren't mercenaries, because in this day and age, they feel like it. It feels like guys are just – it's transactional. Come in, we'll give you some NIL money, and then help us win some games, then leave. But it feels like these guys the program really does kind of envelop them. And I do think that everything being equal, you got to have talent or you're not going to win. But if two teams with equal talent, I just think that stuff kind of matters. I just do. I think it mattered when Florida State was good at basketball, stuff like that, little stuff like that. So anyway, but that was cool to see that. I think with the defense as a whole, there were a couple of plays. There were two plays in a row where Marvin Jones and Patrick Payton made Brock Glenn get rid of the ball really quickly. In fact, Brock Glenn was doing a rollout. This was kind of a wow moment, I thought. I was a little bit far away from it, so I don't know the exact speed and if he was really gaining on him. But Brock Glenn fakes a handoff and does a rollout, and Marvin Jones is right there with him. And he starts trying to sprint around Marvin Jones, and it's like, nope, he can't. And Brock Glenn's an athletic kid, and he's a quarterback. And he could not sprint around Marvin Jones, and he had to throw the ball away once he realized number 7, he wasn't – he wasn't leaving number seven behind. But I don't know if Marvin had the angle on him or not. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know how athletically impressive it was, but it certainly looked athletically impressive. But again, we'll obviously know more about all this stuff when the pads come on. Because, you know, I think the first, 3 days, Aslan, they're just in shells kind of.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the defense – I was not discouraged at all by what I saw from the defense. I think there's a chance it could be pretty darn good again in 24.
I think I had I had to third it out, not a half sack, but you got a third of a sack. I think Daniel Lyons, Patrick Payton – and Marvin Jones Jr. all combined for a sack on one play. I think it might have been Payton and Marvin Jones, or actually, I'm sorry, it might have been Marvin Jones Jr. and Daniel Lyons, who really put the lion's share of the pressure on the quarterback in that rep. So they had a tough time in 11-on-11 as well, trying to get the ball down the field of the offense, because the defense did look pretty stout. So we'll see how that shakes out as another day rolls on Thursday. Corey, I do want to ask you this. I know we can't talk about formations and depth charts, but they ran a lot of rollouts, like more so than they ever ran with Jordan. You'd figure like Jordan has a better skill set, aka speed, elusiveness, than everybody combined from the quarterback room right now. Is there anything that is it because they're going to have so much speed out wide? Is it because they're going to trust their offensive line that much more? Or is there anything that you can theorize as to why maybe is there something they can tap into by using that more in their offense?
No, I don't know. You're right. It was noticeable now that you brought it up. I'm like, yeah, you're right. They kind of were. But no, I don't know. Maybe it's just like that was the part of the playbook that was being installed on the first day, or they were focusing on it's all installed, right? But that was the first one they were focusing on. Because, look, you have a kid that's never played here, two guys. Well, one's a man. A man and a kid that have never played here. This was their first Florida State practice ever with Croman Hawk and DJ. And then Brock Glenn, I don't know, man, did he practice 14 times last year in the fall because he was hurt?
Yeah.
You know, until the bowl. So that's a lot of inexperience. So I think, you know, maybe you're just trying to introduce them, get them comfortable with a few concepts on Tuesday, and then concentrate on something wholly different on Thursday.
Whole part whole?
Oh, whole part ho.
Whole part ho?
Yeah, whole part ho.
You know how many years it took me to finally figure out what that was? I know Jeff always like would joke about it. I'm like, it didn't hit the consciousness enough to where you could just Google ho part ho and get the answer to it. But eventually somehow I did find it out, and I'm like, oh, all right. I'm like, man, that Pruitt really was a country boy.
He was.
I don't know where he's at these days, but yeah, possibly could have been just to reduce the field and give them less options to have to kind of think about and process. Just, you know, kind of circling back to the offense real quick. I mean, I do agree. I think DJ, there's just a certain amount of like experience that kind of exudes from the way he commands himself in the pocket.
Yeah.
You know, Croman Hawk, I don't know what his completion percentage was on the day, but it was not great at all.
No,
but
neither was Brock Glenn's.
He did not look – I think you and I had good nuance in the War Chant rap that you guys did afterwards. Like, it wasn't because of confusion or, you know, anxiety. Like, I think every ball he threw, he overshot. Like, he probably was running a little bit hot on Tuesday and was putting a little too much on the ball. But, like, he knew where he had to go, where the guys were. He was seeing things. He just couldn't get the throws on the right kind of trajectory and the right kind of velocity. But
yeah, it looks like there's something there with him. And on that same token, I thought the same thing about Brock Glenn. I didn't think he had a very good day throwing the ball accuracy-wise. But, man, almost every throw he made, it seemed like to be to the right guy. He was just missing, which, you know, figure that out. But he's also a redshirt freshman. But he at least seemed to be seeing it well enough to throw to the right person. And I promise everyone, that is 95% of the battle. Knowing who to throw it to. Reading the defense and knowing who to throw it to. Then get your mechanics in order. Get it where it's a catchable ball. But I thought he was not very good at all throwing the ball. But I thought, in my opinion anyway, he looked really solid at knowing where to go with it. He's just, you know, you got to combine the two and make better throws.
Yeah, so that's probably my biggest takeaway, because I did feel a little, I don't want to say downtrodden, but I was just, again, it just made me realize that, you know, last year's team really was comprised of just unique individuals that just had some special attributes that you're just not going to find every single year. And I know you hope that you're like Georgia, you hope you're like Alabama, you're just constantly replenishing your roster with top end talent, but they go about it like in a little bit of a different way. So it's kind of hard to continue to want to thread the needle and find those guys that can instantly do it for you. And I'm like, man, they just, you know, some of these guys probably just aren't going to be as good as Jared, aren't going to be as good as Braden Fisk. But you then think about the fact that obviously this coaching staff is they do such a good job of instructing and actually coaching guys up. And you could see them teaching throughout the day and guys knew where to go. Exactly. Well, the offense knew where to go. The defense wasn't confused. It's just, it's getting the rhythm down, getting used to playing with these guys. And they've got 14 more of these to figure out. So again, no reason to panic. I just, you know, want to put some stuff in context. I thought,
you know, what's interesting about that, because I don't disagree with you, but there aren't a lot of Jared Verses out there. I mean, he might be a top 10 pick. Florida State hasn't had a ton of those, even in its storied history.
I know, but Alabama loses Will Anderson, and then behind him is Dallas Turner. You know, it's just. But then again, you had Jermaine Johnson, and behind him was Jared Verse. So,
and we don't know what Marvin is. But right. My point was going to be, like, would it surprise you that if this Florida State defensive line ends up having more NFL players on it than last year's? Because it wouldn't surprise me. Like, I think Peyton is a pro.
Yeah.
We have no idea about Marvin, but there's certainly a chance. Yeah. The kid from Oregon State, I think, is a pro.
Yeah.
Daryl Jackson, I think, is a pro.
Which, by the way, real quick, I know Ira pointed out in the video, but this is the video.
Yikes. Yeah.
He does.
Good. He's good. He looked good.
He looks just ferocious. Like, not that he looks soft or anything last year, but he looks much more toned up. You see him walk by and you're like, that is going to be a very unfair assignment if he's technically sound, which I think
his arms are bigger than my legs. It reminds me of when Jernigan. I mean, he isn't Timmy Jernigan, because who is? But right. Jernigan's arms, who else had those arms? It was like Eddie Goldman, maybe?
Yeah.
Those arms were tree trunks. They were insanity.
So, Lola Hea, Marvin, Patrick Payton, Daryl Jackson, possibly, Joshua Farmer,
maybe the kid from West Virginia, man. Like, we have no idea, but we know that they're solid players, and I think they're going to have more depth. They're not going to be maybe as top-end talented because, again, Verse and Fisk, you might be talking about two first-rounders. Certainly it seems to be you're talking about one for sure. Yet none of these guys might be first-round picks or even first two- or three-round picks, but you might – I mean, you know, you might have a defensive line that ends up with, you know, three third-rounders and four fifth-rounders. Well, that's pretty good. That's going to give an offensive line a lot of what for when you keep rolling in guys that are going to be in the NFL. And I think there's a chance, just body type, because that's all we can really go by. Now, well, we know what Patrick Payton is. He can play in the league. But you know what I mean? Like the new guys, we can't really tell because they're not in pads. But, man, they look the part. They are big dudes. They're big dudes. Just the big dudes that can move.
Yeah. And then special teams, I think they hit the field goal they kicked in the third period that I saw. When they were,
I wasn't watching. I was watching the baseball game. We're at a point now with Fitzy.
Yeah.
It don't matter, does it?
No.
He's not in a competition with anyone, and we know he's good. He was one of the best kickers in the country last year, so we don't even pay attention to Fitzy's kicks anymore.
Punt returner, though, seems to be another open competition. A lot of footage of that up on our site from yesterday. They were struggling to catch and haul it in. But again, day one, we'll see how it looks. They were in a similar position last year, and then Keon didn't start off as punt returner, did he? I feel like, was that like a...
No, they thought Toa Feely was going to be the punt returner when practice started in August. And then by day three, we all saw, well, that ain't going to work. And then Keon, just because they trusted him to be able to catch the ball, they put him back there, and he was good at it.
Yeah, so... That's always an option. Somebody could emerge from there. The madness of March is upon us. Not just spring football and the Noles undefeated on the diamond, but the National Basketball Tournament, the NCAA Men's Tournament, March Madness. It's underway. The play-in game went down last night, and there's more for you. Check out mybookie.ag and use the promo code WARCHANT when you sign for the first time and get an instant cash deposit bonus. What do we got tonight, everybody? We got Grambling State from the SWAC taking on Montana State from the Big Sky. Montana State giving out 3.5. Let's go with the Bobcats. And then we got another playing game, like a true playing game, a 10 taking on a 10. Colorado State, Boise State winner. This takes on the Gators. Colorado favored by 2.5. Boise State's from the Mountain West. Everybody keeps talking about the Mountain West. So disrespected. So we'll go ahead and believe everybody that the Mountain West has been disrespected. Boise State's going to come out with their hair on fire. So we'll take Boise State. MyBookie.ag, promo WarChant requires $50 minimum deposit and rollover requirement of one-timer deposit total, including bonus for withdrawal. For full terms and conditions, visit MyBookie.ag/about-us.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We buried the – I know it's the start of spring practice, and we're covering a team that, in my opinion, is on a 19-game winning streak. Mm. It's one of the right now most stable programs in the United States. We love everything about what's going on at Florida State football. But obviously the story of the day on Tuesday, Aslan, was not Florida State's spring practice debut in DJ's first practice in a Florida State uniform. It was Clemson – finally doing what they should have done months and months ago. Welcome to the party. Glad to have you on board, big dog. It's good to have a friend like Clemson, and they have sued the ACC as well, which feels like a continuation of the beginning of the end for the ACC as a football conference.
Can we, you know, have them throw some money towards the council that we have sought, because they've used the same unenforceable, defense that Florida State's using in their lawsuit against the conference. So it's like, I mean, not only did Florida State, did they run to the roar, tip of the spear, siege the castle, front line, but they also like laid the blueprint out. It wasn't like, not necessarily like the PR aspect of it, where it's like, all right, we don't want to be the first ones to poison the well and possibly, harm a relationship that we might need to hold on to. Like Florida State was like, all right, whatever. Like we'll take it. Like if we have to do that, we'll do that. But Florida State also laid out their argument, their case in public view. So I mean, this is the thing. Like I hope we all know. Like the first person who landed on the moon. Do we know the second person that landed on the moon? I hope we don't.
Do. I don't know the third. Buzz Aldrin was the second one, because he was in the same. He was in the same capsule or spaceship as Neil Armstrong. Couldn't tell you who the third one was.
Yeah, I don't want Clemson to get any credit, but at the same, thank you. But at the same time, like I don't want to give them too much credit. But yeah,
well, that's a big domino, though. It's an enormous domino.
I would think so.
Because what can you do now that the two marquee schools in your conference from a football perspective, which is everything. That's all that matters anymore when it comes to athletics. When both of them are trying to get out of your conference, now Florida State isn't just the subject of all the angst and anger from Tobacco Road. Now they got to point their arrows at Clemson, or what will actually happen is they realize that the days are numbered. And there's a lot of more introspection, inward looking, and trying to figure out what they're going to do as a conference. What they're going to do as a conference, because Louisville doesn't want to be in this conference without Florida State and Clemson. NC State probably doesn't. Virginia Tech doesn't. Miami doesn't. So when are those schools go, like, imagine Florida State and Clemson get out, or it looks to those schools like they're about to get out. Well, Louisville doesn't want to be left behind, and neither does Miami. So they're going to want to get out. And once all these schools start suing, ACC is really in a pickle to try to maintain a conference as a whole. And I don't think that's going to happen. It took Clemson too long, in my opinion. They were too quiet, and they let Florida State take all those arrows, but it's good to know they're back. And hey, Clemson, I'm back on board with you. We're friends again. I was very upset with you for a long time, but we're friends now. And be nice to the Florida State fans at the baseball series this weekend. Mm. Y'all are brothers. Yeah. Y'all are brothers and sisters. If Cam Smith hits a home run, Clemson fan, high five your Florida State neighbor. Y'all are all in this together. So enjoy being in the conference with Florida State.
Interestingly enough, Clemson cites the exit fee being $140 million, which they formulated as three times the ACC operating budget. They call that unconscionable and unenforceable.
Right.
In violation of public policy. Florida State, in their lawsuit, said the exit with the rights and the fee would be $572 million. So a little bit of a window there to work with in terms of negotiation. My buddy who's a lawyer, by the way, Joe the lawyer, Corey, I texted him because he's a very rule of the law man since he's a lawyer, you know?
Right.
And I'm like,
all those guys are on the up and up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's I love him, but he, you know, I hope him and his wife just, I hope it always works out great because I feel like he'll be the worst ex-husband ever if they were ever to get divorced. Like if they had to like split everything up, I love him and he knows this. Down in the recesses of his heart, like he'd probably be a really tough guy to mediate things through. But I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, I know you're all about the law is the law. You sign what you sign. Live with the decisions that you've made. Live with the consequences of your actions. I'm like, and it feels like Florida State and Clemson are like, this isn't fair. Like, this contract's ridiculous. We're not making enough money. This isn't fair. And he's a huge Florida State fan. I'm like, so tell me, like, where are you on this? Or can you sympathize with Florida State? Or are you like your full lawyer dude where it's like, hey, man, like it's unfortunate, but that's what they did. And he says that, quote, now, Corey, there's an overall theory of law that straight penalties are not enforceable. Liquidated damages are. Only, though, if there is a showing that calculating the specific damages would be impossible. So the amount is an estimate related to admissible evidence. I would assume this could fall close to it, but that amount seems like closer to a penalty. So I think what he's trying to say is we're out of here.
Suck it. Suck it, ACC.
We're out of here.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. A lot of you guys probably heard a bunch of legal mumbo-jumbo jargon. I heard suck it, ACC, in those words.
Yeah. So there we go. All right, man. We're done, everybody, for today.
We did it.
We're going to do another show for you later today as well, yeah.
Baseball team won 1-0, by the way. Again, Aslan, for at least the fifth game in a row, did not commit an error. And although they only had four hits, which, come on, offense, what's going on now? Starting to worry me a little bit. They only struck out five times. So, again, you keep putting the ball in play, typically good things are going to happen.
Yeah, eighth inning, I think they led off with a walk. Lodis led off with a walk. They tried to bunt him over to second. He got thrown out at second, but Max Williams reached to first. And I know everyone's like, oh, don't bunt. Well, you bunt because you got Cam Smith behind him, and Cam Smith will probably make everything right. Cam singled to center, put runners on the corner. Then James Tibbs, long fly ball, sack fly.
Don't overestimate again.
I do not.
A single to center is not an automatic first to third.
Mm.
It's good base running, man. Getting from first to third won them that game.
Yeah.
And that's not your normal leadoff hitter. Exactly. But he can run a little bit. But getting first to third right there, getting a good read on a base hit, won them the game because Tibbs comes up and does what he's supposed to do. He hits a fly ball. You get the one run and you win.
Yeah. Cam Smith 1-for-4. Now he's batting .465.
Yeah.
Tying up, Cam. Yeah. Tying up. All right, we're going to speak to Jared Verse, James Rosenberry Jr., Kalen DeLoach, Trey Benson, Akeem Dent, Braden Fisk, and Demetri Emanuel around 11:30 this morning. So... Mm-hmm. Join us over at warchant.com and our YouTube channel. We'll have that stuff available. Man, we're doing it on Thursday, too, and we got practice on Thursday.
Yeah, so they're throwing a lot at us. It's going to be a lot of content for you folks. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, we also speak to Link later today as well, too. So we'll have more on baseball over on the website and on the show for you folks tomorrow. So Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock, and all the content you could possibly imagine over at warchant.com. So go check it out. Hit the thumbs up. Think we deserved it on this one. We certainly appreciate it. We being myself and Corey Clark. You've been listening to Wake Up Warchant, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.